Today, off the plan or off the planet? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, the world's latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by property insider Edwin Almeida. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. I just want to let the viewers know that today's episode is brought to you by Vicks Vaporub because I've got the flu, so I feel like a Vicks lozenger. I've got Vicks all over me, so I'm a little bit groggy and nasally, so I hope that's all right.
I wondered what the whiff was in the background. Skype's pretty amazing.
Vicks Vaporub. Don't forget, when you ask for Vicks Vaporub at your chemist, do tell them Obi-Wan sent you.
Very good. Now, off the plan, you know, Ralan collapsed a couple of weeks ago, right? And that put around 3,000 partly constructed or completed units across Australia, basically on notice that they may not get completed. And I understand now that essentially quite a few of those who put those deposits in may well actually lose them. So what can you tell us about Ralan, but more specifically about off the plan, and when it goes wrong, why does it go wrong, and what are the implications?
Well, a typical deposit is held in trust, Martin, with regard to your, you know, whether it be 5%, 10% deposit, it is held in the trust account by one, the agent, the solicitor. Some conveyances also hold trust accounts. And if you look at it historically, when the 10% deposits were provided to agencies or even solicitors for that matter in to be left in trust for a period of 18 months, 2 years, for whatever, however long it took to sell the unit or until the builder, developer was able to obtain construction finance and get on with their job. And that was also, those monies were also invested. And we have to individually account for them and invest for them. Now, this is a little bit, what your viewers need to understand with this project, it's something that I've seen many times over, and that when they release the deposit to the developers in order to, for the developer to use in other ventures, in other projects, or in the project that they're bought into, it's a lot more convoluted than what it appears. The old saying goes, if you come to the court of equity, you come with clean hands. Let me tell you that a lot of these purchases have not come with clean hands in that transaction. Whatever they're asking for is not really a clean as what it would seem to be. Now, my understanding is that the class action suit, one of the claims is going to be against the obviously the misuse of the deposits by Ralan, but they're unsecured creditors. Simple as that. They're unsecured creditors behind Westpac and behind another company down, another funder down in Melbourne, to the tune of $36 million. And I think Westpac are in there for about anywhere between $400 and $600 million themselves. So there's not a lot of money that's going to be recovered when they downsell all those projects. So when you look closely at what went on, as I said, it's a lot more convoluted. First of all, the plaintiffs or the claimants need to get over a number of hurdles. One is my understanding that they're gonna claim that Westpac and the other secured creditor knew that Ralan were in trouble, and they still kept on funding them to continue on with the projects, and therefore it jeopardized their deposits. Well, it's how deep is your pockets to make that assertion and to make that claim and to take on Westpac? I don't think they'll get up on that. What I've said from the beginning, and if you recall in our many discussions and in the many tweets and correspondence that you and I have, I said from the beginning, from the onset, I said Once again, the claim is not, don't chase the developer. It's got no money. Don't chase the builder. They've got no money. And in this case, forget about chasing the bank because you don't have deep pockets. I said, chase the selling agents and chase the conveyancing lawyers or conveyances themselves that directed or instructed the purchasers to release the deposits. That should have been the one to put up the red flag, Martin.
Okay, so just to be clear, conceptually the idea was that those deposits should have been held separately and not been touched, right? That's what the theoretical position is, but the practical situation is it looks as though perhaps they have been, and therefore there isn't a pool of funds that is earmarked for deposits, and therefore they are unsecured creditors, and therefore they sit behind those with greater claims on whatever assets the business may have, because of the fact that the chances are that there aren't going to be enough assets to pay even those, the unsecured creditors are unlikely to get anything, and therefore they have to look for alternative routes. And the best alternative route is essentially either the person who basically helped them to buy the property, or indeed did the legal transfer of the property, right, or the rights to the property.
And they're the ones that have got the duty of care.
Yeah.
The selling agent's got the duty of care to disclose all material fact and all information surrounding it. And it's not for the selling agent to give financial advice and I'll get back to that a little bit later on as well. Mm. And also it's up to the conveyancer or the solicitor to instruct them and say, hey, look, you are jeopardizing, if you're going to release the deposit, you're jeopardizing that this could happen. And so we did. Now, the thing is that here, Martin, is what we've got to understand is we have a group of people that the majority of the claimants are selling agents that work for Railing themselves. So, and they're the ones that have also instigated new purchasers or their colleagues, family, friends, overseas, whatever the majority were Asian buyers, and they're the ones that instigated. And look, this isn't new, Martin. This mm-hmm. isn't new. This is old school. This was hashed out in the early 2000s. This is just deja vu, except three times harder, and it's gonna and bigger, and it's gonna hit people a lot harder, like the flu. And let me remind the viewers that today's sponsor is Vicks. So don't forget, when you ask for Vicks at your chemist, tell them maybe one sent you. It's going to hit hard. And I'm serious. I know just about it. But it's like the flu. Yeah, you get the flu shot, you get whatever, and it's like you we're not immune anymore. And because of what the mass, the quantity, We're not talking $20 million. We're not talking $30 million like we were talking those figures in the early 2000s. We're talking $200 million. We're talking $300. We're talking $1.6 billion in the case of Railing. So that's what I'm saying. It's going to get bigger and bigger. Now, so effectively what you've got is you've got the parties that are now claiming that they were duped. They're claiming that they were duped based on promises made by Railing without knowing the true figures. Well, if you're going to get proper financial advice, well, that's what your financial advisor would do, is check out the company to see how they're running. Yeah, if they're running properly, have they got all the house in order? Is the business in order? Are things going to track along fine to protect your asset? That's why you get professional financial advice. And in this case, the selling agents and the conveyancers conveyancers obviously have crossed those boundaries, which they shouldn't have, and they should have been looking and protecting their clients. But as I said, there's a lot more behind the story, and it's called greed. Now, I also know that quite a number of these people that are now claiming that they've lost their money. You see, what happens is almost they've almost entered into a joint venture agreement. They've almost become a a joint venture, and they could do a data partition at the end when the build is complete. And you do those sort of things in order to avoid stamp duty implications. And effectively, you become a joint venture partner with the developer. So that's why this has a lot more moving parts to what we are told by the mainstream. And unless you understand, unless you've been in it, it is really, really convoluted. But the best recourse that they have is against the conveyancing solicitors or the solicitors. And other than the people that work for the salespeople that work for Rail and that introduced other people, they're stuck because they're the ones that went out and got more guinea pigs to join the stew pot, the stew, and now they're going to get stuck. Well, we guinea pigs in South America, I just want to let you know, that's why I say guinea pigs and stew, put them all together. It's just that association there. A little bit confused. It's the flu, Martin. It's the flu. So there's a lot more moving parts here, and I really think they've got a the best chance is to follow the solicitors, as I said, or the or outside of the selling agents to follow people outside of the actual group of selling agents that are also claiming, he did me wrong. See, one of the things that I know that it was more like a joint venture agreement as opposed to a purchase is the fact that they were promised, or part of the deal that they negotiated on their purchase was in some cases, an 8-year rental guarantee. An 8-year guarantee. And I can assure you that they also had, I haven't seen the contracts, I haven't seen the deeds of agreement attached to those contracts, I haven't seen how it all worked out, but I'm just going by information that's been given to me. But I can assure you that based on all the stuff that I've seen over the years, there would also be some type of a discount or a deed of partition at the end in order not to pay the stamp duty as well. But they're in a world of trouble. I think the whole railing thing is gonna drag out, and then at the end, everybody really needs to first of all, determine and quantify what the portfolio, the railing portfolio, is being sold at, or they have to quantify that first and then quantify the losses in order to determine who's going to get what. So it's going to be a 2 to 3 year journey. For a lot of them. But the other avenue, as I said, I think the other avenue has a lot more legs and has a lot more potential.
Okay. So, stepping away from the Raland situation specifically, what does this tell us more generally about buying off the plan? And, given the current momentum in the market, or lack of it, and specifically the lack of new approvals and the number of other building firms that are looking a bit shaky, would you go near an off-the-plan purchase at the moment?
No, I've said for many years I haven't recommended to any of my clients to purchase off the plan for over 6-7 years. Because of the type of construction that I've seen being built, because of the fact that the commissions attached to a lot of these developments have always been in the vicinity of 8 to 10%, and which is just loaded on the price. The purpose of buying off the plan was always to assist the developer, assist the builder in obtaining the construction funding. But you bought at today's price. What a lot of the people have been buying for the last 9-10 years, they've been buying at future prices, at inflated future prices, and that's where they've come unstuck. And sooner than later, that gravy train was going to come to an end. And this is why a lot of these people that are now claiming, and these are from my internal sources, these people that are claiming that the developer did them wrong and everything. Really, and yet you went out and put your name down to two apartments, three apartments. I mean, It's all convoluted. But buying off the plane, we do have regulations. We do have statutory obligations in terms of holding deposits. There are certain things. I'm not saying every development's bad. I'm not saying every developer's bad or every builder's bad. No, I haven't. That's not what I'm saying. You and I just talk about current events and what's happening. But that's why I say research. Research the previous development that builder has built. Research the longevity of the building. Has it proven over time that it can withstand, the surroundings in terms of the nature of the nature of the construction can withstand its surroundings, the amount of people walking in and out, the common areas, how they the wear and tear. So these are all the things that we do in order to make sure that people are placed, make sure that people buy the right type of project. But myself, frankly, I haven't promoted, and I get offered all the time to promote off the plane purchases. I get whole, bit, albeit small developments, but I won't take them on regardless of how much they want to pay, because it's one, I'm not confident with the construction methodology. Two, I've never saw that the prices were sustainable, and sooner than later it was all going to come to the proverbial caca anyway, which we are seeing. And three, I also knew that there were going to be mid-tier development companies, and predominantly the smaller development companies were always going to come into strife, because sooner than later, as the market turns, the banks are going to start withholding a lot more funding in terms of the construction, and this is where things get hairy, and this is where deposits get held up. But the other protection that if you are going to buy off the plane, and if the construction is going to take more than 3 months, be it 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, there's a thing called deposit bonds. Yeah, it's just a bank guarantee. At least you're more secure. At least you're not forking out cash as such. You're buying a deposit bond for $1,500 to $2,500, whatever length of time you require that bank guarantee, and that's how you secure the physical cash as well. But more so, it's the statutory obligations by way of the agencies, the agents, and the solicitors and conveyancers to hold that money in trust.
Mm. And so that's an interesting point, right? Because essentially the bank backed deposit bond, right, gives effectively the same security once the property has been effectively finished, right? So you can then go on and transact. But of course, it doesn't give the builder free cash in the same way, does it? I mean, assuming that they actually effectively break the rules. So quite often, my understanding is that particular availability of those bank-backed bonds aren't often spoken about, because they're actually of less advantage to the builders.
Yeah, there are less advantage to the builders, and there are also less advantage to the marketing companies that are selling off the plant. Because let me tell you something: when there's a purchase or a sale, an off the plant sale, the marketing spruiker, I don't even classify them as real estate agents, more so the spruiker, but they carry a real estate agent's license. They get up to anywhere from 30 to 50% of the commission up front on the sale. And so this is another thing that these people from Railand have to overcome as well, because a lot of these people, these selling agents, were giving, I don't know the amounts, I'm being told anywhere between 30 and 50% up front. And that's a lot of money. And that's a lot of money that you earn, because as a real estate agent or as somebody selling property, it's a long time in between drinks if you're going to be waiting until the development is completed. It could take 3 years, could take 4 years. Now, in this case, well, it's never going to be completed. So, but you'd find that the agencies, the agents outside of the Raylan salespeople, perhaps even the Raylan people got a bonus. They would have got anywhere between 30% and 50% of the commission up front, and that commission would have been, around the anywhere between $40,000 and $60,000. And that's hence the push to sell to the overseas market, because they're more used to buying off the plane overseas as well. I spend a bit of time in Singapore. I travel around and I look at. I actually know a number of agents in the Asian, some of the Asian countries, and I did some work with them overseas as well. And they are used to this form of purchase market, where they release the deposits to the developers, and because the way that they purchase property effectively is, they release the deposit, you buy a property off the plan, when construction starts, that's released, and at certain stages of progression of the construction, you have to, as a purchaser, you have to contribute more into the development, and it goes on and on and on, because a lot of the banks over there won't lend them more than 50%, 60% at most anyway. So your 40%, 50% contribution is paid to the building company or to the builder, developer, as the project is being built. And the developer, builder obviously uses that money to build the apartments, so they're used to it. So here they sort of get a further sweetener of these rental guarantees and this and that, not knowing that they don't really have the protection once that money is released, especially when developers go belly up like they have now.
Okay. So in summary, then, off the plan looks pretty wobbly. If people are going to pursue off the plan, there are some checks that they should be doing and some alternative funding options that are worth exploring, particularly the bank-backed bonds. But in the current environment, be very careful.
Definitely.
Edwin, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Martin. Once again, just want to let you know, this program was brought to you by VIX.